All right, we're going to start the second session or part of this symposium. A few reminders to everybody. Silence your cell phones, and I'll encourage everyone to visit or come to our business meeting. It's immediately after this symposium. Each speaker will be given 22 minutes, and I have a little card, 5-minute card, 1-minute card. You exceed the 22 or notify you. Our first speaker in this session is Dr. Glenn Ritchie. He's assistant professor of crop physiology with the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences at Texas Tech University. His presentation is on irrigation management of cotton cultivars in the Texas High Plains.
All right, thanks, John, and thanks, Jessica. I really am appreciative of the opportunity to speak at this symposium. It's been a lot of fun, and I've seen a couple of primary themes as we've been speaking today. They've been primarily talks on wheat and talks from the Southern High Plains, and my first crop consulting work that I ever did was on wheat, and so it was really neat to be able to see the work that's being done in wheat and the excellent research that's been done by Rob and by Victor and by Neil. And I especially enjoyed Judy's presentation because a lot of the work that they do at Bushland is work that we've utilized for the work that we do with neutron probes in West Texas. I did this on purpose, I promise. I was having some issues with my computer this morning, and I was initially afraid that this might be the extent of my presentation and that I was going to have to either do finger puppets or pull out my old notes from Hugh Earle's lectures that I have borrowed from for crop physiology. But what I'd like to focus on is primarily cotton and primarily on some of the components of water use efficiency that we have started to, I wouldn't say that we're forgetting about them, but a lot of times the real hot topic right now is the genetic component of crop water use efficiency and crop water use. And as was mentioned in some of the earlier talks, this genetic potential is important, but the real value in this genetic component is the interaction between the crop and its environment. And like Victor mentioned in his presentation, a lot of this genetic potential comes into how does this plant interact with the environment in order to be successful. We are near the bottom of the Ogallala Aquifer in Lubbock, Texas. And about 90% of the withdrawals from the Ogallala Aquifer in the Texas High Plains go into agriculture. And the challenge that we're running into, and this is something that Paul Calese and several of the folks at Bushland and in Lubbock with the USDA have focused on, is we have a declining water supply. And the challenge with this declining water supply is that we have to move into a little bit more imaginative management. A lot of people are moving into intercropping systems where they'll plant a portion of their pivot to cotton and another portion to either corn or sorghum. There are issues with depletion in the amount of water that they put out and also issues with salt. A lot of the issues that you see as you start to run out of water are manifesting themselves, especially as we go from the base of the aquifer here. As we start to move north, you start to see this yearly pattern of what was happening down at the bottom here 20 years ago has started to happen in Lubbock, and you can kind of see this progression as we move up through the aquifer, particularly in Texas. A little bit about the research location that we work at. Texas Tech has several irrigation research projects that that they do in West Texas. It includes small plot research, large plot research, turf grass research, rangeland research. But one of the things that makes us a little bit unique within the United States is that we have a large number of irrigation management zones, and it's all on subsurface drip, at least what I'm showing here. We have additional irrigation research that is done on LIPA center pivots, but we have a massive amount of subsurface drip irrigation research that we're doing. And so as I present this, keep in mind that everything that I show you is going to be based on subsurface drip, and so if the numbers seem a little bit strange, some of that is related to the interaction between the crop and the irrigation type that we have. Incidentally, the smallest irrigation zones that we have are about 200 meters squared, and our irrigation zones go all the way up to about 3 acres. And so we're able to do everything from irrigation fertility research all the way up to cultivar analysis using large plots or using large numbers of genotypes. Originally, prior to the time I came to Texas Tech, the bulk of the irrigation, even in West Texas, was overhead irrigation. Some of the challenges that we ran into with that were issues with runoff, loss of water through the soil profile, evaporation, drift. These are all issues that we face. But as we've moved into subsurface drip, so part of this management is simply the design that we have here. Now we're able to irrigate right into the crop rooting zone, and so we can have very high irrigation efficiencies. The challenge with this is, and I didn't make this immediately obvious on this slide, but when you have your source of irrigation within the soil, if you're worried about salts, the problem is that you actually push your wetting front up and down in the soil, and you can actually push your salts up into the germination zone. And so it's not a perfect system, but it's a very efficient system. Some of the work that we've done, soil moisture monitoring, which I'll talk about in some detail, irrigation scheduling, crop phenology, episodic drought stress, and sensor-based analysis. I'm going to cover each of these in a little bit of detail and talk about the effects of water on the crop through these things. So I'll start out briefly with the soil moisture monitoring. Some of the primary soil moisture monitoring systems that we typically see include neutron probes, which tend to be cumbersome, heavy. You can't hook them up to a data logger, but they tend to be very accurate at estimating volumetric water content. We also see quite a bit of work with TDR probes and capacitance probes, which both work off of the dielectric properties of water and the capacitance of water. We also see a lot of, and I put the matrix potential in quotes here because it's actually a measure of electricity through a bridge, and so it's used to estimate the matrix potential, but there are several methods that we can use to measure the water in the soil, but we run into the issue of either we can measure how difficult it is for the plant to extract the water from the soil, or we can measure how much water we have available in the soil. As soon as we try to determine one from the other, it gets a little bit challenging because we move into a nonlinear relationship between the two. One of the interesting things that we've seen with soil moisture monitoring, and I'm using the same general concept that Judy was showing earlier of tracking the soil moisture by depth in the soil. And in this, we just did it as it relates to the season-long volumetric water content. Sometimes you see things based on the soil moisture that you don't immediately see based on the crop growth and development patterns. A couple of things that I would like to point out here. First of all, you can consistently see a horizontal line that runs through here. Sorry, I'm not very good at using the mouse here. You can see a horizontal line that runs through here by days after planting, and it's at about the 40 centimeter depth. The reason for that is that's where our drip system is, and so this acts as the source for our water application. And something that was a little bit surprising to us, and this is just one representative graph, but we've seen it over multiple years, multiple varieties, multiple environments, has been that, and I guess this shows that sometimes we miss something in our soil physics class the first time we take it, and so we have to be reminded in our research. I had always been of the assumption that if we have severe deficit of volumetric water content, that we're going to have a dramatic loss of volumetric water content lower in the soil. And instead, what often happens is because the root zone does not extend down into this bottom region here, our zone of withdrawal tends to be in here instead, and we tend to leave some moisture that's still within what would be the effective rooting profile for an irrigated crop, but we leave that in the soil as unavailable to us. And so that's really primarily what I'm going to say about the soil moisture part of it, but simply that sometimes having the advantage of this instrumentation gives us the opportunity to be able to look at things that we otherwise wouldn't necessarily see with it. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about the growth and the phenology of the crops now in relationship to water. One of the things that I'm well known for in West Texas is the fact that we do a lot of plant mapping. And plant mapping consists of two different options. You can either do it in the field, like I'm doing here, or you can actually harvest the crop here and take it into the lab, and you can actually pull off individual bowls by fruiting site on the plant and actually see when and where that crop was developed over the season. Cotton is an indeterminate plant, and because of that, the relationship between where the plant goes, and I'll just tell you, this animation on the bottom is on an endless loop. I considered just looping at one time, but I considered based on the amount of this we do, this is kind of what it feels like. All right, so now you've seen box picking in action. What happens is the fruit at the bottom of the plant is actually produced at the beginning of the year, and then subsequently, as we move up the plant, it's produced later and later in the year. So cotton gives us a great opportunity to autopsy it at the end of the year and see where the fruit was produced based on the irrigation treatments that we applied to it. So if we have this fruit at node 6 position 1, we have a corresponding cell in our magic cardboard box here that holds node 6 position 1. And we can very rapidly see the distribution of fruit on this plant. Now, part of the reason I show you this is because I'm proud of my animation, but part of it is because I'm going to show you several slides coming up that are related to the bowl distribution on the plants. This is an example of some work that we did a couple of years ago, and this is just the general pattern of bowl distribution among several cotton cultivars. So if you have something like Delta Pine 1044, it tends to move up here. If you have Fibermax 9160, it moves around here. And that shape and the height of those curves is actually going to tell us some of the yield characteristics. Incidentally, it might look like Fibermax 9160 didn't do quite as good here. It tends to have quite a bit larger bowls, and so that's something that you have to keep in mind for it. But one of the factors that we've seen is that as we change the irrigation rate, we change the bowl distribution on the plant, which is not a real big surprise, but one of the interesting things is that based on the cultivar that we use, this change in bowl distribution is actually very different among the cultivars. For example, this is Delta Pine 0912. This is an example of increased irrigation over and the effect that it has on bowl distribution over node. So these individual lines here are actually the slope of the relationship between the quantity of additional irrigation that we added and the additional bulls that we produced on the plant by node. And some of the cultivars that we use actually have a decreased quantity of bulls near the bottom of the plant as we increase irrigation, but they make up for it dramatically up on the top of the plant as essentially a shift in the plant's resources in order to try to maximize the yield potential by sacrificing a little bit at a non-optimal part of the plant. This is another cultivar, and as you can see here, we don't really have this drop-off at the lower nodes, but we have a very distinctive shape between about node 12 and 14 in the bull distribution. We've also done a fair amount of water deficit research. This is in line with what was shown with the wheat research, that a lot of times optimal environments are going to allow us to have additional yield for a given quantity of rainfall plus irrigation. All right. The next topic is episodic drought, and because we have a limitation in the water that we have in West Texas, there are several reasons why we can have episodic drought occurring in the crop. And so I wanted to show you some of the patterns that we've seen with episodic drought with cotton based on some of the research that we've done. The conventional wisdom was that the most critical time for episodic drought in West Texas was between the period where the buds are forming on the cotton and the period at which the flowers emerge on the plant. We call that the period of squaring. I don't know where the name came from. But what we found was that in instances where we are able to make it all the way to first flower before we have stress on the plant, we can actually have a marvelous catastrophe. This was an example of what happened with 3 weeks of water deficit at flowering and the effect on these bulls per node per plant. So you can see this dramatic drop off in the quantity of bulls that we have. Within a cultivar, just a rule of thumb is that about 90% of your yield is going to be related to the quantity of bulls on the plant, and about 10% is going to be related to the mass of those individual bulls. So that showed up in our yields as well. You can see we had this dramatic drop-off at the early flower portion of our stress, and we saw drop-offs at the other timings of stress as well, but not nearly as dramatic. So we've extended that. I'm not going to talk about each of these graphs, I promise. One of the areas that I'm working with Jim Burdofsky and Katie Lewis and Curtis and others is how is our yield affected and how is our bull distribution affected if we have different irrigation rates and different irrigation timings in tandem with each other. So these are 27 different types of irrigation that Dr. Burdofsky threw at this. It ranges everything from low irrigation throughout the season to any combination of low, medium, and high irrigation at the beginning, the middle, and the end of the season. And it's interesting to see the patterns that we develop in the productivity of the crop based on that. That led us to the idea of what if we could use phenotyping in order to ascertain what this crop is actually doing during the season, and give us a better idea of how we can manage it within season. So one of the areas that we've focused on in recent years is the concept of automated phenotyping. And this is a research sprayer that we use. It has several sensors on it. We're adding more sensors every time we come up with a good idea. They've ranged from cameras to measurements of the spectral reflectance to measurements of plant height, canopy temperature. We're looking at three-dimensional measurements for 2016, which ought to be entertaining and a little bit of a headache. But each of these sensors gives us another parameter of what this crop is doing in relationship to its environment. The ultrasonic sensors measure plant height, which is closely related to our ground cover fraction, and also gives us additional information on the canopy structure when we compare it to ground cover fraction. We use reflectance based on the differences in the reflectance between healthy plants and water-stressed plants. And based on that, we do vegetation indices. This is just an example of one of those NDVI to estimate the productivity of the plant. We do a lot of work with canopy temperature. And one of the issues that you run into anytime you attach a lot of sensors to a platform is that those sensors are going to see whatever that platform forces them to see. And so you really have to keep in mind, especially with thermal sensors, which don't have a defined straight line field of view, that you don't see a lot of extra soil or extra environment that is not related to it. Are we at 1 minute? Okay, I was only at 19 minutes on my timer here. Sorry about that. All right.
I lost track with that second slide.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was going off my watch here. We do camera research where we actually are able to filter out the soil and look at it that way. Here you can see some effects of irrigation on in-season growth. No big surprise here. But the interesting thing is that now we can actually quantify the in-season effect on the yield and fiber quality. So in summary, our goal is to be able to integrate our soil moisture, our water deficit timing and amount, and this autopsy method of looking at the bowl distribution in order to manifest what type of growth habits we have with the crop. I'll go ahead and see if we have any time for questions. Yes.
With the soil moisture, you kind of take points to measure it. How do you scale that off
All right, the question is that when we're using soil moisture monitoring, we're doing point measurements, and so how do we scale that up? There are two answers to that from a small plot field research. What we typically do is we just put out a lot of sensors, and then we're able to analyze based on our different cultivars, our different irrigation treatments. On a field scale, typically you scale that up using some type of remote sensing application. Jessica has actually done a lot of research, and the research group that she was with at Texas Tech did a lot of research on that scaling up and actually modeling based on the growth habits of the crop. That's correct.
Can you call that plant water bleed? It has a bunch of roots and dry soil, probably generating heat and getting those to matter. If you have that situation, even though there's no hydraulic signal, everything's wet, you know, you've got plenty of water, so you got a bunch of root tips and dry soil.
That's an interesting question. The question is that even on the high irrigation level in the lower portion of the soil, we saw a depletion of water deep in the soil. And he was asking, couldn't we expect that we're seeing some restriction on the growth of the crop through that? From a physiological standpoint, I would say yes. From a productivity standpoint, as Judy mentioned in her presentation, that about 80% of total evapotranspiration results in the highest yield and fiber quality. It's actually not necessarily a bad thing because cotton will outgrow itself based on having adequate water, and sometimes it's good to give it signals that it needs to be starting to become just a little bit more determinate.